Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Good morning. Welcome to Undisputed. It's Friday. How are you guys doing today? I'm with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp, and I'm ready to get this show going.
So am I, Jenny. I am so ready to get going. I can't wait, Skip Bayless.
Shannon Sharp, you've been in trouble all week, and I believe you're going to be in more trouble starting right now.
Well, hopefully Sunday after Sunday, which will be one of the happiest days of my life, we can stop this blasphemy of one goat James. That's what I want to happen.
Oh, Shannon, you have been defending your guy all week. Good news for us. We also have Eric Dickerson joining us later on in the show. But you know what? Only appropriate that we start by talking about Michael Jordan and those Bulls, because it's hard to believe, but we are going to see the end of The Last Dance. It concludes this Sunday, and Skip, you taped a social media video to be released on Sunday afternoon in which you go into great detail about two big one-on-one interviews you did late in the Bulls' 98 season with GM Jerry Krause and head coach Phil Jackson, both of which you said blew your mind. So, Skip, I want to ask you your final takeaway from covering the Bulls in 1998 and that season.
Jenny, in all my years in this business, I've never found myself in something so baffling, so confounding, so troubling, and ultimately so mind-blowing as what I found myself in the middle of in 1998 as the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, watching The Last Dance from the inside out. Big sit-down interviews in late March with Jerry Krause, the GM, and then in early May during the Charlotte playoff series, big sit-down in Phil Jackson's office with the coach of the Bulls. And what I heard from each of these two men, whose relationship obviously had completely deteriorated, was just difficult for me to process. And I remind everybody, I had just come to Chicago before that season, straight from Dallas, Texas, where I'd written three books about the Dallas Cowboys. The second of those books predicted that Jerry Jones would soon fire Jimmy Johnson. That was after their first Super Bowl. Obviously, they won a second together, and then Jerry fired Jimmy, as my book predicted in the final chapter would happen. Everybody told me I was out of my mind then, but I said, no, this is predictable. That blow up, I got. This one, I still can't get. And Shannon, here's the point. During that playoff run, I caught Michael after one game, and I told him that Phil was just openly saying, and we were all presuming, that if Phil got fired, if his contract didn't get renewed, and we knew that was going to happen because he and Jerry had fallen completely apart, that everybody presumed that Michael was going to go too. And Phil was openly saying to everybody, including me in that big sit-down interview, that Michael had run out of gas in 1998, and because of his loyalty to Phil, he was just going to flat out retire. Remember, we're talking about the greatest player who ever played in any team sport, willing to walk away in the heart of his prime, or at least at the end of his prime, and missing his age 35, 36, and 37 season by just sitting out, which is what he ultimately, as we know, did. But when I asked Michael about Phil's contention that Michael would just up and retire, Michael really coldly replied to me, that's Phil's opinion. And that was the first sign of life and hope that I heard from Michael Jordan. And it made me very happy because there was no reason for Michael to go too. And as we all know, Jerry Krause had plucked Phil Jackson out of obscurity. He was a coach in the CBA for the Albany Patroons, hired him as his assistant coach. Then when Phil kissed up and buddied up to Jerry Krause, Jerry fell in love with Phil and finally replaced Doug Collins with Phil Jackson. Doug had coached Michael for three of his early years. And yet, once Phil got hold of the reins of the organization and they won their first championship, Phil completely turned on Jerry. He had just duped him to get the job and began to mistreat him just the way Michael and Scotty shamed and ridiculed little tiny, the Penguin, as I called him, Jerry Krause. So Jerry Krause was livid and wanted to get even with Phil. We get that. And he already had a handshake agreement with Tim Floyd from Iowa State to be the new coach of the Bulls. So I publicly encouraged Michael to just forget about Phil. Forget about Tim Floyd. They called him Pink Floyd off the rock group. That was their sarcastic term for him because Phil loved Pink Floyd. And I thought Michael could then go to Jerry Krause and say, hey, look, I realize the bridge is burned between Jerry and Phil. I got it. They'll never coexist again. So let's forget about Phil, but don't give me Tim Floyd or Pink Floyd. Give me a real coach. Bring back Doug Collins. Obviously, Doug ultimately went with Michael for his last hurrah years, 38 and 39 years old in Washington. Give me Doug Collins back. Give me anybody who's a made man in the NBA as a head coach, anybody with credibility, stature, and experience, and I'll go forward. Why Michael wouldn't do that to this day haunts me, because that was the move to be made. And I believe Jerry Reinsdorf would have compromised with that move. Keep Jerry Krause as the GM, bring in another coach that Michael signs off on, not Tim Floyd. But as we all know, Michael stuck by his guns inexplicably, which is why I can't wait for maybe episode 10 of The Last Dance. I want to hear what Michael says about this, because I wrote to conclude my column in May and June that year, I said, the worst sports thought I could ever think is Michael Jordan gone at age 35 and Phil still coaching at 53. And as we all know, Phil went right on. It took 1 year. He went right on to the Lakers and wound up coaching Shaq and Kobe to three straight championships. And what did I always call Phil? Everybody called him the Zen Master. I called him the Spin Master. I never trusted him. I never trusted his sort of Svengali hold over Michael. Michael was very impressionable when it came to Phil. And I believe that Phil talked or almost duped Michael into retiring out of loyalty to Phil when he did not need to. Phil didn't retire. Phil went on and won three more championships in a row with Shaq and Kobe. He had a three-peat in L.A. So I believe that Michael also got taken for a ride by the Spin Master, as I call him. And in the end, it was the most confounding and actually the saddest story I've ever covered.
Well, to your point, let me start with your points before I make mine, Skip. The reason why he didn't talk to Jerry Krause, because Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf were two people that he couldn't bully. Because you know why, Skip? They had more power within the organization than him. See, you can bully Steve Kerr and Scotty Burrell and some of those others because they're a player. You are the best player, so you have you're able to reign over them with your tenure, with your play. But you notice he can never bully Jerry Krause. Every player that he basically said he wanted, Skip, and this is documented, Jerry Krause went and got somebody totally opposite. If Jerry Reinsdorf, and like I said, Jerry Krause took a lot of criticism, took a lot of heat, but Jerry Krause was just a shield. This was Jerry Reinsdorf because he could have made all this a moot point. He could have said, Jerry, you're going to stand down on this. We're going to keep this thing rolling until the wheels fall off. But when Jerry Krause went to Jerry Reinsdorf and says, this is what I want to do, okay. You see what happened, Skip? It happened again. Rest his soul with Abe Polian in Washington. You see, when people have more power than you, you can't bully them. That's why he couldn't bully Jerry Krause. He could, like you said, he could have, but he knew what the answer was. Jerry Krause made it abundantly clear. He can go 82-0, win all of his playoff games by 30, and he's still not coming back. And if Michael retires, Michael's earned the right to do whatever he wants to do. So it was a moot point. So he was like, I'm not wasting my time because there might be a time later in life I'm going to need that energy. I'm going to need that breath that I'm wasting on Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf. That's why he didn't do it, Skip. You know why he didn't do it. Because he couldn't bully them. He couldn't put them in a corner like, hold on, Skip. What? I thought winning. So you mean to tell me he said winning? And if you don't want to win, get out the way or move and don't do it? Jerry Krause never said, nah, we good here. Skip, look. At the end of the first three-peat, he said that he was exhausted. He was tired. The media barrage, the constant barrage, the constant criticism. And it had started to, you know, they started to say, well, what happened with your father was a direct correlation of what was transpiring with Michael in his personal life. I don't believe that, but the constant criticism. Skip, you mean me the toughest, the most mentally tough guy in the history of sports couldn't handle media criticism? Wow. Imagine what he would have to go through in the social media age today. Imagine what LeBron James hears constantly. There was no debate show. There was no 24-hour news cycle on sports in 98, 97. When Michael was in his heyday, in his prime, can you imagine the criticism if some of the things that was reported, going gambling, Skip, the day of, what was that, the night after or the day before playoff games or the constant golfing. Can you imagine the criticism? Imagine a guy, a player now, Skip, in basketball, say it be LeBron James or Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and that would be caught in the casino before a championship game or after a championship game. They would get reamed.
He got reamed.
That was a thing.
He got reamed. He was caught. Yeah, that everybody wrote about it. Everybody wrote. It was everywhere.
And that's my point. The criticism, the barrage. Remember, Magic said, y'all keep being on the guy, you're going to run him away from the game. Imagine what LeBron has been going through since he was 17, the constant criticism. I'm just saying, Skip, the thing was, and I agree with you on this, this is what you and I agree. You and I agree that Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause should have let this thing roll out. Let all the gas run out of the car, Skip. And if it runs, puts you down side the road in the middle of the season, oh, well, you put you down in the middle of the season. But I don't believe he should have broken it up. I believe he should have let somebody else break it up, Skip. Normally, Empire just don't say, you know what? We're tired of lauding over all this vast territory. You know what? Let's just give it up. Normally, somebody from the outside comes and takes it over. Or, within this case, like the Roman Empire, it fell from within, Skip. So when I look at it, I agree. I believe Jerry Krause, Jerry Reinsdorf should have let it go. But Michael, do I believe Michael should have at least voiced it, gone to Jerry Krause, gone to Jerry Reinsdorf? But I believe, Skip, like he said with Scotty, they never tore up Michael Jordan's contract. So the likelihood of them tearing up Scotty's contract and extending him when they never did that for Michael was not going to happen. And remember in the doc, Skip, Michael says Scotty knew Jerry Krause wasn't going to do that contract, redo his contract. So Michael, having been with Jerry Krause basically since after his first year, 1985, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, he took over for Rod Thorne. He knew Jerry Krause front, with and back. And when Jerry Krause got something in his head, Skip, that was it. There was no turning back. But I thought of all this, yes, Skip, Jerry Krause, maybe you don't like him. But I thought Jerry Reinsdorf, Skip, had been portrayed very favorably in this documentary. When you and I both know, when you peel everything away, he was the owner. Skip, how does a general manager have more control, more say-so within an organization than the owner? If Jerry Reinsdorf, just like he did in 98, when he brought Phil back from that last dance, he could have said, I'm bringing Phil back again in 99 for another last dance. You know, Skip, you know, 550, well, encore. Well, I'm bringing Phil back. Could have been the last dance, Skip. I'm going to do an encore. You know, okay, that's it. And then the singer goes back, and then he comes back out and give you another set, maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes. That's what Jerry Reinsdorf could have demanded of Jerry Krause. Bring Phil back for an encore, and we'll see how this thing plays out. But what I'm going to take most from the documentary, Skip, is that, I knew about on the on-court stuff. But behind the scenes, the maniacal guy, what he was willing to endure, what he was willing to go through, what he was willing to push his teammates to get to a level. That's what I'm most impressed with. Skip, like I said, being quarantined has forced me to watch something other than, you know, politics, Skip. And so I've watched a lot of documentaries. And so Skip, I knew Sam Cooke could sing, just like you know Sam Cooke can sing. But when you watch his documentary, you get an opportunity to see a different side of Sam Cooke that you like, I did not know exists. I did not know he had that type of relationship with Muhammad Ali. I did not know that he was in Miami at that fight, Skip, and he and Jim Brown, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Muhammad Ali was in a room together. I didn't know that. So now you get an opportunity to see Michael Jordan off the court. Everybody saw him on the court, Skip, especially you did. You were covering day to day, but you saw some of the things behind the scenes. I did not see that behind the scenes. So that was great for me to see.
Is the show over? I have never heard one person talk so long on Undisputed in the history of the show as you just talked. You said a whole lot of nothing. Let's get back to the first three-peat. And you said, oh, he burned out. He couldn't take the media heat. Baloney.
That's what he said.
You agreed with me right here on the show. You agreed. I think it's my turn to talk now. You agreed that it had to do with gambling. It was some kind of a suspension / forced hiatus that he took off to play baseball. You agreed after the first couple of episodes.
No.
Yep, that's what was going on. You're suspicious about it. I'm real suspicious about it to this day. It made no sense to me. He cost himself two championships right there. So he missed those two. He missed a season and about three-fourths of the next season and was not ready to play Orlando, obviously, in the playoffs and the conference finals. And now we fast forward to Jerry Reinsdorf. And I got to tell you, I resent you calling the GOAT a bully. He is not a bully. He was simply the greatest leader / motivator in the history of sports. Not one player who played with him has called him a bully. Not one player has said publicly, I hate him. I couldn't stand him. They all thought there was method to the madness. All of his ridicule, whatever hell that he made some pay, it was all to make their weakness a strength. And they all contributed down the stretch. And I told you yesterday, I showed you that roster. It was, to quote the great LeBron James, top heavy as bleep. It was Scottie Pippen, nothing but a Robin to Batman. And then it was a Rodman who barely was able to stay in bounds thanks to the guidance of Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And after that, it was just a bunch of guys that he turned into winners. He toughened all of them up. And when you say, oh, Jerry Reinsdorf is the one guy he couldn't bully. Baloney, he couldn't bully him. He just didn't try to use his power to power play him. If he had gone public, if he had come to me and said, I need you to print this, print that. I went to Jerry Reinsdorf and I said, Jerry, pick any coach who is experienced in the NBA, not Tim Floyd. I will stay for two more years and we'll win two more championships. If he had said that, that's a power play. I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf could have withstood the media beating he would have taken under those conditions. But Michael got Svengali'd, he got Machiavellian'd by Phil Jackson. Phil talked him into, we've got to do this together. We've got to retire. We've got to quit on them.
Hold on, Skip.
Let's quit together.
Skip, hold.
And Phil quit for one year, and then he goes to L.A. and coaches Shaq and Kobe.
No, Skip. Don't wimp out. Say, pick any coach you like, and I come back. Bring Phil back. That's the ultimate power play. Tell Jerry Reinsdorf, bring Phil back and let us win two. Whoa.
No, hold you on. Can't win
you
that.
You mean to tell me
can't,
the GOAT?
No, can't win
Why?
It.
Why?
Can't win it.
Why?
No.
He Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Phil. Well, I just told you what happened. Phil had turned on Krause. Krause picked Phil and he turned on him. He duped him into getting picked and getting elevated and he turned on him. Michael could not defend that. Michael bought into the spin master's spin, so it was up to Michael to step back and say, you know what, in the end, Krause, Phil, They're just two June bugs on my windshield in the finals, splattering on my windshield. I can go forward by myself. My team is not too old. Scotty went on and played six more years. Steve Kerr went on and won two more rings. Ron Harper went on and won two more rings with the Lakers. Every player on that team went on. Dennis Rodman went on and averaged 10 rebounds for the Mavericks and then 14 for the Lakers. They all still had plenty of gas in the tank to win two more championships. It should have been 10 straight championships for Michael Jordan.
Stop it, then you would not have any leg to stand on. But see, it's just like his bullying. It was very selective in who he chose to bully. I read a story yesterday about him and Robert Parrish. And Robert Parrish says, I'm not enamored with you because I have rings. Michael said, I'm going to kick your you-know-what. The Chief says, I took two steps toward him and says, no, you're not. And Michael, I never had another problem with Michael. You see, Michael had selective, as Charles Barkley said, he had selective bullying. Who he knew who to bully and who to get him and who he could bully and who he couldn't.
Why didn't he go,
if Skip, if he's what you said he is, why not go to Jerry Reinsdorf, make a power play, go to Skip Baylor. Skip, I want you to write this and I want you to put it in big, bold letters. Jerry Reinsdorf, if you bring Phil back, I'll come back. He didn't do that because Skip. There is no Skip. Nobody can bully a billionaire unless you're on their level. Michael Jordan wasn't on their level. Now, maybe now if he was a billionaire and you can transport him back and he'd be 34 and have the amount of money that he has, okay, we could have a different argument. But at that time, Jerry Reinsdorf looked at him like, you're still a player. I pay your salary. You're rich. I'm wealthy. There's a difference between the two. That's why he couldn't bully him. Skip Bayless, you can make it all you want to. He didn't want that. Pick a coach. But that's what bullies do. They select guys they view as weak, and they pick on them. He knew Jerry Krause had more power within the organization than he did, and so did Jerry Reinsdorf because he owned the team. So that's why he didn't bully. You can dress it up. You can dress it up all you want to and say, well, you, I and Shannon, you talk, and you said absolutely nothing. But at the end of the day, as simple as this, that's what I got from the documentary.
Nothing. You're still saying absolutely nothing. He got spun by the spin master. That's what happened.
Everybody's spinning.
Phil convinced him. Phil convinced him, let's both take a year. Let's quit. Let's walk into the sunset together. And Phil kept walking and walking and walked all the way to L.A. to coach Shaq and Kobe.
Hold on, way to go, Michael.
You took three years off.
A man, the most mentally tough, the guy that has the strongest mind in the history of sports, got spun. He got duped. He got led astray. Yep. He got run amok. Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Oh, so I'm confused, Skip. Now, how can a man that has the strongest man, the most indomitable will in the history of team sports, maybe in sports period, how could he let a man dupe him? Skip, I'm confused. Now, you need to shed some light. I'm going to turn it back over to you. You need to tell me how does a man that has that kind of intestinal fortitude, that kind of mind, get duped? I need to hear from you right now.
Because as opposed to LeBron James, he actually looked up to and respected coaches, head coaches. LeBron has always coached his own team. And I'm going to quit saying I resent it because in the end, all you've got now is bully. Oh, now I can dismiss him as a bully. It's the biggest crock that you've ever tried to sell on this show before. It's all you've got. In the end, it's over. Thank you, Last Dance. It's the last dance for you and your LeBron is the GOAT argument, which is the weakest argument in the history of sports.
But Skip, you make it seem like two things can't be true. That because a person is a great athlete, he must be a great person. He must be a great leader. And every great attribute that comes along with being a great athlete, when you and I both know that's not true, but you try to play that because you want Michael Jordan to be this idyllic figure, this perfect. There's nothing wrong with Michael. He has no flaw. Yes, you do.
I told you from the start, I told you before the documentary started, it's going to come across that he's merciless, ruthless, heartless, method to madness. Six championships in six tries with six MVPs with a team that was not that talented. That is basketball genius. That is GOAT.
And the two, and and the two little white guys in the suits, he couldn't bully. The two smallest guys, he couldn't bully, and it broke up. Bam! No mercy.
Time for our trending story of the day, sponsored by Kia's tough and ready lineup of all-wheel drive SUVs. Give it everything. Well, the final two episodes of Michael Jordan's documentary, The Last Dance, air this Sunday. I do not want this to end. But Shannon, what do you want to see from both episodes 9 and 10? Oh, come on. What do you want to see?
Maybe a bonus track about the Washington days. You know, those 2 years in Washington happened, right, Jenny? I mean, because he did bring Scottie Pippen. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, was he on the roster in 94? So I'm trying to figure, how does anything from 1994 season, how does that make The Last Dance? Only to make Scottie Pippen look bad because he wouldn't go in and take the final, and pass the ball in to Tony Kukoc to take the last shot. How does that make The Last Dance? What they got to do with Mike? Mike wasn't even there. Mike was in Birmingham. But somehow that made it. So I just want to see some of the old bonus track. See what it was like in Washington and D.C. Because they were very happy to see him play. No, Skip, I think in all honesty, all seriousness, all jokes aside, I don't really know what I'm looking for, Skip. I want to know how he's, obviously the last shot's going to be in there, but I just want to know. So we've seen, you know, the maturation of Mike, and we've seen the behind the scenes of how he got guys motivated. Skip said it was just motivation. It was harsh motivation. It could be construed as bullying. All that aside, I don't really know where it's going to go now, Skip. I really don't. Other than the last shot, which that's your favorite moment in sports history, because you purchased that photo to see Michael Jordan hold that pose. You probably got him to sign it too. I bet you did. I bet you got him to sign it. You think you're slick, Skip Bayless?
But I did not.
Oh, you didn't get it.
No.
So, Skip, I do not have any idea what these last two episodes is going to encapsulate. Because basically you got 2 hours and basically it's the final shot. So I don't know where we're going from here.
Okay. To your first point, semi-serious. Yes, he did come back after 3 years off. The last 3 years of his prime, ages 35, 36, and 37, he did not play basketball. Why? I don't know. That's what I'd like to hear. But he did come back. This is The Last Dance. This is about the 1998 season, the final one in Chicago. But 4 years later, he came back at age 38 and 39 to Washington. He played okay. He wasn't in the best shape. He did smoke too many cigars at that point. He averaged 23-6 the first year and 20-6 the second year. It wasn't pathetic, but it wasn't pretty.
Right.
The point is,
he had moments.
He had his moments here and there, but whatever. This is about 98. This is about how it ended and why it ended. And again, I was there in 98 as the columnist of the Chicago Tribune. And what was often perplexing to me was Michael spoke a lot to the media without really speaking. He was the master of the cliche, and he could say a whole lot without saying much of anything, unless you really backed him into a corner with a pointed question, as I did about Michael. Phil keeps saying that it's a done deal. You're just going to quit when he has to walk out the back door. And Michael said, that's Phil's opinion. That's when I had some hope. Okay, maybe Michael isn't going to just go with Phil out the back door. But the point is, he's rarely spoken his heart on what really happened. So, Shannon, I'm hoping that we get to see that guy who's now kicked back in that easy chair in these interviews. He's got a cigar, and he's got a little something in his glass, and they keep filling it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want him to, so to speak, let his hair down. I know he doesn't have a whole lot of hair left, but whatever's up there, let it down. Let us see what's inside you. Let us hear on the basketball court what happened in the classic flu game at Utah in the 97 right. finals. Let us hear what was in your heart, soul, mind against the Pacers. Shannon, I was there. I covered all seven of those games in the conference finals in 98. It was a hellacious contest between a team coached by Larry Bird, who was the coach of the year in the NBA that year. Mm-hmm. And the star was, as you know, Reggie Miller, but it was deep in talent and firepower. Rick Smiths, the two Davises, obviously Chris Mullen, Jalen Rose, Travis Best, Mark Jackson. It was a loaded basketball team that caused Michael and company a whole lot of problems. The home team won all seven games of that series, including the Bulls winning game seven, 88-83 at home. It was knockdown, drag out. Reggie says that the Pacers are, we see the previews for what's coming up in episode nine. Reggie says that the Pacers were just better than the Bulls. He might have been right about that, except for that one guy on the Bulls. And then we come to the last shot game at Utah. And I've told you, Scotty was sick before the game, and then he wrenched his back on an early wide-open dunk, and he was virtually useless the rest of the game, scored 8 points. Mm-hmm. In that game, Michael scored 45, while the whole rest of the team scored 42. So what's going on in his head during that game? Because they were pretty sure they wouldn't have Scotty for a potential game seven at Utah. So is Michael saying it's do or die now? I have to make this shot on Brian Russell. I got to go steal the ball first from Karl Malone. I got to close the deal now because we might not be able to close it in game seven. I want to hear that. And finally, as we talked about to start the show, Shannon, I want to hear, does he have any regrets for not going to Jerry Reinsdorf and saying, hey, let's make a deal. Let's compromise here.
Yeah.
I'll stay.
Yeah.
I know Phil and Jerry are do not invite him anymore. The bridge is burned. I get it. They can't coexist anymore. So give me a made man. Give me Doug Collins back as my coach next year. Don't give me Tim Floyd. Jerry Krause had fallen in love with Tim Floyd. He's a nice guy. I got to know Tim very well the next year. But Tim was a rising college basketball coach. He'd done really well at New Orleans. And then at Iowa State, they'd gone to three straight NCAAs. He was a fine young coach who then was a disaster the next 3 years without Michael and got fired in the fourth year. So the point was, if Michael said, give me somebody with some NBA experience who I could respect, I'll come back for two more years. Well, I want to know, will Michael talk about that in episode 10 on Sunday night?
Yeah.
I want to know. I want to hear it from the goat's mouth. What happened? Why did it happen?
Yeah, you're right, Skip. That would be very interesting if he would reflect back and say, you know what? One of my biggest regrets is that I did not go talk to Jerry Reinsdorf and I did not get him to try to change his mind on bringing Phil back. Skip, look, it's hard for me to believe, but Jerry Reinsdorf and Phil Jackson, they don't have to communicate. They're not communicating about game plans. Your office is in one corner, mine's in the other. And so we don't have to get along. Just, hey, You get the players and do what a contract, all that stuff. Let Phil work with the team. You guys stay out of each other's hair. So that's the way it's going to be. So, yeah, it would be very interesting if he's going to be that reflective. But I don't know if Michael is the guy that says, I have any regrets about anything that I've done in my career, especially basketball-wise. Skip. Now, well, yeah, so that was the thing. That would be something that I would like to hear. Does he like, man, what could have been? Like I said, Skip, I believe Jerry Reinsdorf should have allowed someone outside of the organization crumbling from within to tear this thing down. If the Pacers, if the Knicks, or somebody, Utah, whomever, beat them, San Antonio, if somebody beats them, I got no problem with that. But don't you mess it up.
No.
So that's going to be interesting. I forgot about the flu game.
Yeah, and also remember this. I think it was like episode one, Jerry Reinsdorf's on camera for the documentary saying, Jerry Krause told me that in 98, the team had gotten too old. So Krause had convinced Reinsdorf, who also owned the White Sox and didn't have that much focus on the Bulls. He just let Jerry Krause run that basketball operation. But the point is, Jerry Krause convinced Jerry Reinsdorf that the team was too old so Jerry Krause could start it over and show that he could win without Michael Jordan. Baloney, Shannon, look at the ages of the players. It was not too old. Scotty was 32. Rodman was 36, but he was a below-the-rim rebounder. He still had basketball left right. in him. Ron Harper went yeah. and won two more rings as a starter for the Lakers. And then we go all the way down the roster. Tony Kukoc was 29. He was sixth man of the year. That team could have come back for two more years. I believe it would have been favored to win the next two championships. I believe it would have. Who knows if it would? I don't know. Would they have gotten hurt? Would they have broken down? Would Michael have run out of sort of psychological gas? Maybe. But I still believe yeah. that team was positioned to win two more championships.
Or at least get to the finals. You like them over San Antonio?
I
you
would
know,
have.
San Antonio had
that
a young
San
Kimmy,
Antonio team.
David.
I know. And David. No, I got it.
Skip, I forgot about the flu game. I think the thing is, Skip, when we look at Mike, he has such iconic moments. You know, he had the flu game. He had the last shot in 98. He had the acrobatic layup in his first NBA Finals against the... So he has moments that you will never, ever forget because you'll remember where you were. Because you remember Scotty helping him off the court and he's sitting down and as soon as he sits down, he like yep. plops down, Skip. You remember that. You remember him holding yep. this. You remember him having the ball, tongue out, got the ball in his right hand. Then all of a sudden he said, nah, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to do this. So you remember that. It's just that the moments are so iconic that you will never forget because, you know, even though he was great all the time and he had some moves that you skip. He started on one side of the basket and three people are around him and somehow he lays the ball up and gets fouled. He has moments, but it's moments in those games that you will never, ever forget.
You know, it sounds like you're making the case he was the GOAT and is the GOAT.
Oh, my goodness. See, there you go, Skip. There you go. Skip. Why you do this? I give the man some credit. I give the man credit. I done spent probably $100,000 on Jordan shoes. And you got people out here convinced that I don't. Well, I need y'all to pay me all my money back so I can really hate on Jordan. I need all my money back for these Jordans I got. That's yeah. what I need you guys to do, especially you. No mercy.
All right, guys, let's get back to talking some football because Pro Football Focus released their all-decade team top 101 players. Topping the list was Tom Brady, followed by Aaron Donald and Drew Brees to round out the top three. The next quarterback on the list was Shannon's guy, Aaron Rodgers, down at number six. Shannon, you got a problem with this or do you agree?
Yeah, I got a big problem. Big problem. I don't see a scenario in which Drew Brees should be ranked ahead of Aaron Rodgers. Skip, if you look at it, Aaron Rodgers has a Super Bowl MVP, and two regular season MVP in this decade. Drew Brees does not. Skip, playoffs. Drew Brees is 4-6. Aaron Rodgers is 10-7. Drew Brees has 21 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Aaron Rodgers is 36-11. And if you look at the championship games they lost, Skip, 2019, they gave up 37 points to the 49ers. 2016, 44 to the Falcons. And we know what happened in overtime against Seattle. They failed to field an onside kick. So if I just look at it, and I understand that Drew Brees has the numbers, Skip, but he's thrown the ball over 1,000 more times than Aaron Rodgers did in this decade. And the 7-9 Pro Bowl appearances, Aaron Rodgers missed a half of two seasons. But if you look at what they accomplished, Rodgers has 6 division titles. Brees has 4. You look at the Super Bowl appearance. You look at NFC Championship game appearances. That's 4-1 in Rodgers' favor. So I'm surprised that Drew Brees is so much higher than Aaron Rodgers. Another one that I thought was like, but then when you look at it, Skip, J.J. Watt. I think what happened to J.J., Skip, is that he started off like gangbuster. But if you look at over the last 3 or 4 years, Skip, he's kind of like been nicked. He's missed a substantial amount of time. And I think Aaron Donald has passed him. So I was a little surprised. Would I have been disappointed if J.J. Watt would have been a little higher? No. But I understand what they took into account. Because the last 3 years, 3 or 4 years, Skip, he's missed a lot of times with injury. But the biggest problem that I have is with Aaron Rodgers being way below Drew Brees.
Wait a second.
Wait a second.
In our living room here.
Ain't no elephant in no living room.
Tom Brady is number one on this list. Your man, Aaron Rodgers, is 6th. You have repeatedly told me the greatest thrower of the football, The greatest ever is Aaron Bleepin Rodgers. You have told me he is transcendent, that he is consistently, he has been better than Tom Brady. So why didn't you go right to the top of the list and say Aaron Rodgers should not just be above Drew Brees, he should be above Tom Brady? You did not say that because I don't think you really believe that.
Skip, in this decade, Brady has been to 5 Super Bowls. He's won 3. His numbers speak for itself. If I'm not mistaken, they've won the division every single year. Skip, Tom Brady deserved to be the quarterback in this decade. That was not my, I made my point. The problem that I have is Drew Brees at 3 and Aaron Rodgers at 6. I believe that should be reversed. I stand by that. So you try to bring something. We're not talking about Tom Brady. See, you always try to get Brady to this argument.
He's number one.
We're not.
Okay, oh, I see what you're trying to do. Okay, you're trying to deflect. America, Shannon Sharp just admitted that Tom Brady is better than Aaron Rodgers. It's over. He has lost the basketball GOAT argument and the football GOAT argument in the same week. It's over for LeBron James, and it's over for Aaron Bleepin Rodgers. If I might, could I read just a couple of lines from the capsule on Pro Football Focus on Tom Brady ranked number one? He has the highest single-season grade Pro Football has ever given a quarterback. That was back in 2016. That's not that long ago. He has the greatest four-year stretch Pro Football Focus has ever graded. That was from 2015 to 2018. That's not that long ago. And Pro Football Focus says Tom Brady defines clutch. I've been trying to tell you that for 4 years. In the fourth quarter and overtime, he still has the highest Pro Football Focus grade of the decade. And beyond that, as great as he's been in the clutch, he's been doing it without making many mistakes. That's what truly makes him special, says Pro Football Focus. I know this stat's going to be hard to swallow, to sort of let it compute, but think about this. Tom Brady in the decade had, by grade, only 124 what are called turnover-worthy plays. That's out of 6,151. That's 2% of his plays in the decade were termed by Pro Football Focus turnover worthy. That's outrageously low. That's by far the best. That's why he is the unquestioned GOAT of the National Football League, which brings me to sixth ranked Aaron Rodgers. It makes the point, Shannon, and I'll give you this. Late 2010 and all of 2011, Aaron Rodgers was sensational. He made a case for about a year and a half that he was the GOAT. But that was a long time ago. And that was the end of Aaron Rodgers as you knew and loved him. And Pro Football Focus concludes in its capsule on Aaron Rodgers, what holds him back from the very top of this list is that he just couldn't sustain that level. And over the past few seasons, has sunk deeper and deeper into a rut of some bad habits. That's Pro Football Focus. That's not me. So they are validating what I've told you. He's been in decline over the last 3 seasons. Lots of bad habits. They grade him lower and lower on Pro Football Focus. Well, you better ask something smart because I think you're in trouble.
No, I'm not in trouble. I'm glad that Pro Football Focus put this out, but they just didn't start playing quarterback in 2015 through 2018. So it'd be very interesting to see if they were to grade some of Peyton Manning years, some of Dan Marino years, and so we could see if those are, how comparable are they to Tom Brady's season.
They did.
Second of all, Skip.
No, they did.
In a decade, who turned the ball over? Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers? In the decade of 2010, it's a simple question. Yes, interceptions. Who had more interceptions, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers? It was a simple question. It wasn't a statement. It was a question.
Okay, I got a simple answer. They have a chart on Pro Football Focus. You can look it up. Over the decade, Tom Brady had by far the fewest turnover-worthy plays. Aaron Rodgers, to your point, was second on that list. But by far the fewest was Tom Brady.
No, ain't no turnover worthy plays. I'm talking about turnovers. I'm not talking about smelling the donut. I'm talking about eating the donut. Now, which guy ate the donut? Not smelled the donut, Skip Bayless. Which guy turned it over the most?
Sometimes you throw one to the other team and the other team drops the interception. That happened more often than not.
No, Skip. Yep. Skip, I just want to know one thing, Skip. Did you eat or didn't you eat? I mean, you know, man, you know what? I wanted to make me a steak last night with some baked potatoes and yada, yada, yada. Did you eat? What did you eat, yada, Skip Bayless? You keep telling me sometimes you throw it to the guy and he drops it. Did he have more interceptions than Aaron Rodgers? A simple no or a simple, your Aunt Jenny, can I treat the witness as a hostile witness? Make him answer the question.
Tom Brady had the fewest turnover-worthy plays, said Pro Football Focus. This is their list, and they ranked Aaron Rodgers sixth because his play fell off after 2010/11. Case closed. End of argument. Game over.
Although, if I'm not mistaken, so he fell off so much that he won the MVP in 2014? Damn.
Okay, but the last 3 years, counts in this decade.
Yeah. But they said his play fell off after 2010 and 2011. But yet he won the MVP in 2014. So how much did it fall off?
Well, a lot the last 3 years. In fact, it fell off so much they decided to penalize him all the way down to sixth on the list. And they admitted what holds him back from being at the very top of the list is he just couldn't sustain. Shannon, you're clinging to the past. You're holding on to what used to be and screaming before your very eyes is the fact that Aaron Rodgers has not been very good over the last 3 years. And even last year, he was 18th in QBR and 23rd in completion percentage. That won't fly. That's not going to make you number one in the decade.
Skip, but if you look at it like that, that's like saying Usain Bolt fell off. Okay, because he doesn't run 9.58 and he won the Olympics with a 9.80, you're like, well, he fell off. He's not the same. But no, he's not. He's still winning. Skip, when you compare it to that, when you compare it to those historically great seasons, the likelihood of somebody going 45-6. Skip, come on now. Well, if that's the case, Tom Brady fell off because he's never had another season in which he went 50-8. So he fell off. If you hold Patrick Mahomes to that mythical season, 5,000, 50 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, if you judge him by that, you're going to say he fell off. If you judge Peyton Manning by 55-10 and he doesn't have 5,400 yards, yeah, he fell off. Skip, come on. He still had better numbers last year than Tom Brady, and he fell off, and Tom Brady's still playing at a high clip. I can't understand that. I just don't know how. A guy has more touchdowns, fewer interceptions, a better completion percentage, a better QBR, better yards per attempt. He fell off, but the guy that he had better numbers than is still falling on. I'm confused. That's all I'm saying.
So I ask you one last simple question. It requires a simple yes or a simple no. Should Aaron Rodgers be ranked above Tom Brady at number one on this list, Shannon Sharp? Simple yes or no. No.
Due to my attorney has informed me I have the right to the Fifth Amendment protection, so I use my right
Plead
to the Fifth Amendment.
Got it.
Yep.
Game over. Case closed. No mercy.
Well, Kendrick Perkins is siding with LeBron in the GOAT debate. Perk tweeted a side-by-side comparison of LeBron having averaged more points, rebounds, assists, and a higher shooting percentage in his last three finals losses than Jordan had in his last three finals wins. So, Shannon, does this prove LeBron is the GOAT?
I think, and I love Perk, and I think Perk does a great job of highlighting kind of like what I try to do, but I think the thing is, Jenny, people have dug in. And they've chosen a side, and they're not moving off that side. These are very compelling numbers. When you look at it, he's averaging 3 more points, 3.5 more points, 5 more rebounds, 5 more assists, and shoot a higher percentage. And he's losing these games. But I forget the thing I was looking at the other day. The 2015, 16, and 17 are ranked the highest opponents that either Michael or LeBron could have possibly played. Five of the top seven that Mike, when they graded the teams that Michael played and the teams that LeBron played, LeBron had five of the seven. Now, mind you, the 2018, the second year that Kevin Durant there, they didn't even make it. Now, we know what Kevin Durant represents. That team did not even make it. Let that sink in for just a second. So, in other words, LeBron James in finals competition has faced tougher opponents than one Michael Jordan. Now, Skip, he loved all these stats and facts that he loved to point out. I'm just pointing out stats and facts of what these articles said, that LeBron James' competition in finals have been tougher than Michael Jordan's in finals. I mean, I don't really know what else you can ask a man to do. A man averages 35, basically 11 and 10, and he's losing. I don't really know what else what you can ask a man to do, Skip. I really don't.
The article in question was on the website 538. That's what you read.
The overall premise of that analysis,
correct. The overall premise was Michael Jordan's playoff opponents were tougher than LeBron's playoff opponents. That's because in Michael's day, the East was the beast. And in LeBron's day, the East was the least. So he had just easy pass. He had super highways to the finals. I will give you that Golden State was the toughest finals opponent either LeBron or Michael ever had to contend with. I give you that. But remember,
Spurs.
Remember, LeBron had his biggest meltdown against the Dallas Mavericks, who were ranked by 538, the easiest finals opponent either LeBron or Michael ever played. The 2011 Mavericks, correct. Easiest finals opponent, and the chosen one became the frozen one in that series. Michael never melted down in any series of any round of the playoffs. So now let's go back to Kendrick's idea, his panel that he put up on his premise. Twitter. It's so misleading because it's a bunch of phony baloney. Here's what's not included in those numbers. And Kendrick, it was a nice try, but you failed again to make LeBron the GOAT. He's the phony GOAT, rated PG, phony GOAT. And here's why. In the final Bulls three-peat, they played Seattle, Utah, and Utah. The games were played much more physically then, and the scores were far lower than the LeBron Golden State scores. So there are far more points to be scored against Golden State because it's more run and gun. Against Seattle and Utah, here are the average scores of those finals. Against Utah, it was 93-89 was the average score. The first Utah series, the finals, the average final was 88-87. Then in the three-peat finals against Utah, the average was 88-80. So all the scores are down in the 80s. But guess what? So the average score of those three-peat finals for Michael, the second three-peat, was 90-86. He scored 35% of the 90 points. Now you look at LeBron against Golden State. The average score of all three of those finals was 112-103. Many more points scored by both sides. LeBron scored 34% of those points. So Michael, 35% of his three-peat points, and they won. And LeBron, 34% of more points to be scored, and they lost. They lost in six, then in five, and then in four. They got swept.
But Skip, but this is what I don't understand. Why you never make that now with Tom Brady, that they don't attack the quarterback, the wide receivers have more freedom, they throw the ball more. No, I just want to know. Because all you do is talk about the style of pace. LeBron, they're getting up more shots, so this is why his numbers. But you never do that for Brady. You don't say they don't attack the quarterback like they did in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You don't say they clutch and grab the receivers, that the receivers there, the defenseless receiver, and they call. You don't make that argument. All you do is highlight what Tom Brady is doing. But every time I give you numbers about LeBron, you try to highlight why he's doing it. You won't just give him credit and say, man, this guy's great. He's played unbelievable. You always try to find a caveat. You try to find reasons to why.
Again, our audience is hip to Shannon Sharpe. They get it that when he's losing an argument, he always has to change the subject. So all of a sudden, I have you on the run with some cold, hard facts, and you say, what about Tom Brady? This isn't about Tom Brady. This is about Kendrick Perkins trying to make a weak case, a lame case, that LeBron is better than Michael because of some bogus stats. Misleading, misanalyzed.
So I want to make sure I'm hearing you correct. So in other words, LeBron James is really not scoring 35 points, right? So is it 35 or is it not 35? Is it 12 assists or not? Is it 10 rebounds or not? I just need to know, is it that, yes or no?
Okay, look, I give you that. Scores higher, he's scoring more points. I also gave you this. If you remember, I've said this many times on Undisputed. In 2015, the greatest three games LeBron has ever played in his playoff life, games 1, 2, and 3 of the 2015, the first finals against Golden State before they had Kevin Durant. LeBron had lost Kevin Love before the finals started. He lost Kyrie in overtime of game 1. And what did he do? He put that team on his back and carried them to a 2-1 lead with game 4 in his house in Cleveland. If you win that game, I'm going to be backed into a corner because you're going to be on your way to the greatest feat of your career. You by yourself are on the way to beating Golden State with Steph and Klay and Draymond and Iggy for that matter. And what happened in game 4? LeBron spit the bit or swallowed the bit.
Nah.
He came up small in his own house. He shot 7-for-22 that game. He went 5-of-10 from the free throw line and he disappeared. And everybody told me back on First Take, oh, he just ran out of gas. Baloney. He's the fittest athlete in sports. That's all I ever hear.
Well, but Michael Jordan said he was running out of gas at the last of the last three-peat. But you didn't say nothing about that. You didn't say anything. Michael said that.
He won.
That's what Michael said.
He won.
That's why he took time off. He was running out of gas. That's what he's saying. I didn't say it. Call him and tell him. Say, Mike, you shouldn't have said that. So now he ran out of gas.
Shannon.
He took a year and a half off. Did it happen, Skip? Yes
Shannon.
Or no? Did it happen?
And I want you to know that I'm not saying that Seattle or Utah in the last three-peat were Golden State, but they were really good basketball teams because Seattle that year had the second best record to the Bulls in 96 when the Bulls were sensational.
Yeah.
They went 72-10 and Seattle won 64 games and were second best and first best, obviously, in the West. And then Utah was the second best record in 97. And then Utah tied the Bulls in 98 for the first best record. So don't tell me they weren't quality opponents. There was nothing underdoggy about either of those teams. They were really tough-minded, very good, well-coached basketball teams.
Skip, if you don't mind me asking, the Blazers, how many Hall of Famers did they have on the Blazers? How many did they have on Seattle? And how many did they have on Utah? If you don't mind me asking. Clyde Drexler, 1. Seattle, Gary Payton, 1. Utah, 2. Stockton and Malone. Okay, let's go 2. To the Spurs. They got 4.
It's a lot.
The Spurs have 4. Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan, Kawhi Leonard. That's 4, right, Skip? Is that a lot? It's 4 a lot?
No.
That's a lot, right?
You always tell me that Tony Parker and Manu are completely overrated. They're broccoli, and they don't belong in the Hall of Fame. That's what you told me.
Skip,
the Spurs have 2. I'll give you 2.
No. Skip, stop that. First of all, you know Tony Parker's going to the Hall of Fame because he was Finals MVP. Manu's going to the Hall of Fame because of those rings and his international play. He led Argentina to the gold medal. You know he's going. Kawhi Leonard, 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, 2 Finals MVP. Tim Duncan was ranked in the top. He was ranked ahead of Shaq and Kobe. So stop that, Skip. Stop it right now. And Golden State got four Hall of Famers. Go James! No mercy.